Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. We got the good cameras. We're ready to go. So you had mentioned Kyle Rittenhouse.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about him right away?
I didn't have anything fascinating, but I will just say that I watched probably 30 minutes to an hour of the cross-examination of the guy that was up yesterday, Gage, I believe. And
the guy's bicep got shot off.
Yes. It was the most entertaining real law thing I'd ever seen.
Well, so for people who don't know, and correct me if you think anything I say is incorrect, but he was the guy who, and this is his version of it now, although not what he said to police. He ran after Kyle, pulled a pistol on him, and then Kyle shot him in the arm. And if Kyle hadn't shot him in the arm, he admits he was going to shoot Kyle, probably to kill, because he thought Kyle had murdered somebody undeservedly so, and he was vigilanteing, basically. And then he said the word
active shooter, yeah.
And then he told the police that Kyle shot him, and he didn't mention that he had a gun.
He neglected to mention that he had a gun, which was a hilarious piece of the court proceedings where the lawyer, and as you're watching, have you watched it?
No, well, the only thing I watched, spoilers, is at the end, they said the defense attorney says, because the prosecution called this guy, just to be clear, the prosecution called him as their witness.
Mind
the defense attorney says, so I'll paraphrase here, but tell me if this is correct. You walk towards Kyle. You pull your gun on Kyle. You are going to shoot Kyle, at which point Kyle shoots you after you are walking towards him with a gun pointed towards him. Is that correct? And the guy goes, yes, that's correct. And then the camera just cuts to the prosecutor, and they're just, the guy's just like holding his head. And
so he was doing a lot
basically.
Of that. I don't know if that's so that moment might have been interpreted as an emotion that it wasn't. The guy didn't look happy, one of the prosecutors, but he was often like looking down at his notes. I watched a long time.
I mean, I could be wrong. That the judge said before this, for people who don't know, this trial is not a trial on if he should have been there, mm-hmm. if he crossed state lines with a gun. This is not this trial. This trial is when Kyle pulled the trigger in each situation, was he under attack and or did he have the right to think his life was in danger? That was what they were trying to prove or disprove.
100%, yeah.
And then the person, one of the people he shot, said, I was trying to shoot him.
Yeah.
So that was just, that's just it. That's just over for the prosecutor, for that particular person. He shot three people. So now the only thing they have is the other two people, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So I read that as like, yeah, I mean, that's GG's for that third charge.
Well, all the legal experts on Reddit say it is, which is, who knows. But I guess the interesting part as I was watching it is just, you would never do this to someone in conversation, but the methodical backing of people into corners.
Brutal.
It was brutal
to
watch. So, and you did not mention that you had a gun at that time. No, I was, I had just, had the most traumatic experience in my life and just had this. It says here that you knew exactly what Kyle was wearing when you interviewed for this.
Yeah.
It just like, and there's also no, what's interesting is, unlike an argument, there's no like slam dunk, like, you're a liar. They just kind of let it hang, which might even be worse.
Well, the other thing is you can perjure yourself if you lie.
Okay, so the other thing that he might have made him do, which might not come out, is apparently, and this is what they seem to be setting up for another person to cross-examine, which hasn't yet happened, is his roommate at the time and friend went to visit him in the hospital and then put up a Facebook post. Do you know this?
Yeah.
Saying, like, my one regret is that I basically didn't kill him.
The person whose bicep got shot off says, my regret is that I didn't beat him to the punch and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his roommate posted on Facebook.
With a photo.
Saying,
of him in the hospital.
This is what this guy said.
Yes.
And then on the stand, they asked him, did you say that? And he said, no.
No.
So and now they're going to call his roommate
the other guy up.
And either the roommate's going to have to say, I made that up. Which maybe he'll lie.
This is almost definitely what he'll do.
Because cover his friend.
Because there's no way to...
prove it.
To prove it.
Right.
So either you perjure yourself, but nobody finds out, or you admit that your friend perjured himself.
And he has to then potentially face
charges. Or you made it up, which is possible. You know, you might have just been a cool guy at that moment and made something up for social media. It wouldn't be the first time. But no, it was... We don't need to spend too much time on it. It was absolutely mind-bending to watch this guy who looked like he had never expected any of these questions, never prepared, had no sort of cohesive answer for why the story was changing.
Well, he, I think, did not have a carry permit for his pistol. So if he told the cops that he had a pistol, he did something illegal.
He just had so much time in between the event and today to make sense of it and for them to go, okay, so what are you going to say when they ask you why you didn't say this? I'm going to say that I was on drugs. Okay, what are you going to say about this?
Well, the problem
what are you going to say if they ask you video. If you planned to... Yes.
So the most interesting thing to me about this is when I first saw the Kyle Rittenhouse case, I went and watched all the videos that were out there. So this isn't crazy news to me. Like, I watched the guy pull a gun on him before Kyle shot him. But what's interesting is, like, where you get your media determines how you feel about the event. So for a lot of people, this is the first... This has been out there since the incident. But this is the first time that they have allowed themselves to consume that information. So you've watched a lot of people change their opinion about the event.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always out there. The footage was out there to watch this guy pull a pistol before Kyle shoots him. And it just wasn't covered by certain news stations. So people are thinking this is coming out now, but it's been available the whole time.
Yeah, that's probably the most interesting comment on the entire situation, which is almost asinine to say, but how quickly people had strong opinions about it, how different the evidence that was referenced was. So, like, on one side, I've heard so much about he crossed state lines, he had a gun, he shouldn't have been there, XYZ. And there's just two sides talking past each other in terms of was he in a bad position that maybe he shouldn't have been in? Perhaps did he act in self-defense? Like, a lot of the online screaming seemed to just...
Yeah. Well, the one thing I was thinking about that's interesting is how guns skew what you can do in self-defense, basically. Mm-hmm. So one of the other victims, I'll say, was hitting him with a skateboard. And then Kyle shot him and the person died. And that is self-defense. The person was attacking Kyle with a weapon. But also, it's pretty unlikely, I think, that you would die from someone hitting you with a skateboard. So there is an escalation of violence that guns... There's no hitting someone softly with a gun. Like, you can punch someone to a varying degree of... I can punch you and not knock you out. I can punch you and knock you out. Mm-hmm. I can punch you in the stomach and you definitely won't have any issues.
So... It's very unclear. I will take the other side of, like, okay, so you hit someone in the head with a skateboard once. Will they survive? Probably. Might they have serious issues? Maybe. They'll probably survive. Would he have stopped? Would the crowd have jumped on?
Oh, sorry. This is just my general thought with owning a gun, which I'm not opposed to at all, is when someone breaks into your house and you go to, and let's say that person does not have a gun, but you have a gun. Like, they might have just ran off, or maybe you guys would have gotten a fist fight, or maybe they would have gotten a knife and killed you. You know, it's not hard to kill someone without having a gun. But when you do have a gun, your only option is to shoot this person. So you're going to just horribly injure them or kill them. Mm-hmm. They guns just take everything to an 11 immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Same thing with road rage. Two people in cars scream at each other and then they pull over and the one just shoots the other one. It's like, yeah, it goes from screaming to you get shot with a gun. They just take everything to an 11, basically, if they're fired.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is, I guess, why, like, middle school violence is not so bad. Because, like, you can both go as hard as you want, give each other bloody noses. Everybody's 99 out of 100 times. Yep. Totally fine. I don't know if that's right, wrong, or but I understand what you're saying. Is that it?
Well, I think he's going to walk completely, because the other charge, the person was trying to take his gun away. And in a lot of states, that is basically the same as having a gun, because the thought is, if you don't defend yourself, the person will then just shoot you with the gun. Mm-hmm. So if someone tries to disarm you, you basically have a green light to shoot them in self-defense.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to walk. My question is, has this trial been public enough that that won't result in riots, or do you think there will be riots?
I don't think there'll be riots. Joe Biden's president. I haven't heard of any cops killing black people. I guarantee you it's happened at the same exact rate that it was happening when Donald Trump was president and was up for re-election. Like, these are the diet of outrage that gets fed is very, very curated.
Well, we talked about this. It is weirdly, like,
every 4 years,
police shooting black people, and the BLM coverage on the news, it correlates very aggressively with presidential elections.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's what's interesting beyond all of this is just all of the names, you know, the Jacob Blakes, and there was a dozen others, just haven't heard any.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's egregious examples in a country of 330 million people.
Oh, now, in the last 12 months?
Yeah.
Since Biden was elected?
Yeah.
100%.
And I think that says more about the conversation than anything, which is...
Yeah, there's been a Breonna Taylor in the last 12 months.
There's been some, whatever. There's been something that people would have gotten upset about in that time frame were it publicized. And it, I think, goes to show you that if you're having a conversation and you have a side or another side, a powerful question to ask is, like, who decided we were having this conversation?
Yeah.
Who and what are their interests? Because that will, I think, take you to deeper levels of insight than, is it right or wrong? Should Kyle Rittenhouse walk? Should this officer or that officer or this person? So that's my take.
Yeah. I love it. You want some more uplifting news?
Sure.
Boyan Slott, your boy, did you see he launched System 2?
Yes.
Do you want to talk about Boyan, since I know you love him? Or
I don't know a ton about him. I've only watched a couple of his videos. Yeah, he's doing the ocean cleanup. There's a big patch of trash in the Pacific Ocean. And he originally, I saw that it's a different system now, had tried to make a completely, is the word analog? Like, just no power.
yeah, it was so,
trash scooper that would just, like, go with the current, and due to the engineering of the way it was built, that it would float in such a way that would allow it to capture trash without trash escaping while keeping fish safe. And then they would go out there, haul back all this, you know, tons and tons of trash and clean it up, as well as having these river interceptors. The idea being that if you can get these particular, they look kind of like mini yachts, but they only sift through trash. If you can get them into the world's 1,000 most polluting rivers, you can stop this type of thing from happening again.
Yeah. So the thing I thought was super interesting is that his vision, which was very inspiring and futuristic, of this unmanned, automated, and energyless, basically using the ocean's own currents to fuel it, is not what happened. Mm-hmm. That was his pitch. Everyone thought it sounded amazing. It turns out it was a little bit too good to be true right now. Mm-hmm. And instead what he has is crewed manned boats pulling a giant net that is designed to not catch fish. And then they pull up the garbage and then they drive it in. It's actually not that technologically crazy, but I don't think he ever would have gotten the funding for it if that was his original idea. And that's what I think is interesting, because it is cleaning up the oceans, but it is manned. It requires fuel and paying these people wages. And then they recycle the plastic and try to sell it to pay for all that stuff. So it's interesting to me, because this guy is internationally famous and his dream is coming true that they're cleaning that. And he got there a little bit by biting off more than he could chew.
To have a completely closed loop. So they've tried to close the loop in other ways by buying carbon credits and negating their carbon footprint and all that sort of stuff. Not to say that it's not a worthy cause. I don't know entirely, but I think it's a much more fascinating, more time appropriate pitch to say, we're going to have just use nature to clean nature. You know, mm-hmm. just the wind and good old-fashioned Roman engineering.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of Steve Jobs when he recruited the Pepsi CEO.
Yeah.
He's like, do you want to just sell sugar water for the rest of your life, or do you want to come change the world? It's like, well, you could just go to the Apple CEO and be like, do you want to just fund cobalt slave mines for the rest of your life while you sell phones? Or do you want to come change the world? It's like not inherently that much different, but the setting it up as visionary is what recruited a CEO who at the time was kind of punching out of Apple's league. And similarly, Boyan got a bunch of publicity and raised a bunch of money with that vision. So I don't know if there's anything to that idea of, and I wouldn't necessarily propose people do that, but I do see in the world having a big vision that doesn't really come through tends to work out in people's favor.
Yes. Well, I mean, and of course there's the Theranoses, there's all of these other things. Like it appears as of today is still able to accomplish the end goal to it to a meaningful degree versus Theranos.
Sure.
Just was not.
Well, he never falsified anything, which mm-hmm. I think is a big difference. Mm-hmm. He never.
That's a fair point. If Elizabeth Holmes had said, just to her employees, I'm going to figure out how to take one drop of blood and do this, and we're going to do it, but had never lied to anybody about where they were, and was like, okay, we're going to just take a smaller vial of blood.
Yeah, if she
could probably
same,
have a successful
same
business.
Same vision, yeah. But hadn't lied, and when senators came in, instead of saying, oh, the machine's not working, she's like, hey, for now, we don't have the tech, but we have raised $8 billion. We're on our way. In the meantime, do you want to see the blood results that you would get, but we're going to have to take a full vial? Mm-hmm. That would be the Boyan's Lot version of it. Which is, he never lied. He said, I'm going to try to create this technology. He tried to create it, and then it didn't work because the self-propelled one, he did create it, moved too slow. So plastic mm-hmm. escaped. Mm-hmm. Whereas she said, I already have it. It's fine. Just look over here at these dancing monkeys while I throw the blood that we took from your finger away and draw a vial of blood. So she was outright lying, whereas Boyan just ultimately hasn't figured out the technology yet.
Sure. So no comment on the morality of it, but stating an ambitiously large vision that can't be achieved, not lying about anything, seems to be a way to get people on board. And then it's kind of like they have the boiling the frog where the temperature goes up. It's almost like freezing the frog. Like the temperature just goes down and down, sure. But the frog is comfortable in your pool and he's already given you all his money and signed up to work for you. So that just continues to, you've got something, you've got a business at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I also wonder if just having a vision and laying out that you're going to get there, but you're not there yet, might be totally fine. Because Elon with SpaceX, we're going to terraform Mars. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we're going to put satellites up that give internet to everyone on the planet. Mm-hmm. Probably people wouldn't be as hyped about SpaceX if that had been their end goal. Mm-hmm. But nobody cares that he's monetizing SpaceX using that internet provider business to ultimately achieve that long-term goal. Mm-hmm. So I do think you can also have a big vision that you might never achieve. It might take you decades to achieve and still inspire people. And then on the way there, you know, get there by doing things like manned boats, which aren't exciting, or internet via satellite, which is kind of exciting, but not the actual dream that people hyped SpaceX up with.
Sounds like an effective way to to get people on board and then deliver something. I was watching a handful of the Kyle Rittenhouse because I watched some of the live stream, mm-hmm. and then what came up were people debating a year ago when it happened about, was it self-defense or not? And a lot of these were Twitch streamers, and I don't think that these are bad people. I think it's almost impossible to argue in good faith in front of an audience mm-hmm. that expects you to represent their side. So these are smart people that often see where arguments are going and will disrupt the flow of conversation for instance, this is the one that I watched. He was close to proving that this guy's principle that you cannot defend property with lethal force was not a principle that he actually subscribed to. That he says, well, what about, Koreans in the LA riots? Like, were they justified? Well, they were, and he's having a hard time. But he just doesn't. He just kind of says, you're trying to get a gotcha. You're trying to do this to me. You're trying to do that. As opposed to having a thoughtful exploration of, what do I think? Mm-hmm. Why do I think it? Oh, maybe I should amend this principle. I don't.
We've talked about this. We've talked to political people that I felt the exact same way with.
Yeah.
No one, it's rare that someone will change their mind on camera when what they say will lead to their fans liking them less.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just never going to happen. So once you're a Ben Shapiro or whoever it is, and you know your audience sways a certain way, it's incredibly hard to publicly come out and admit, hey, that belief I have that you all also have, turns out it wasn't super well-founded and I might have to change it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's, you're just asking a lot of someone while on
especially
camera.
With regards, like where people can do it is where they get the quote unquote facts wrong and video evidence comes out. I was wrong. I heard the wrong thing. But with these moral arguments, people do not prove, and they just, I think, get more intransigent as these conversations occur, because now you've spent hours and hours and hours defending a position.
Yeah, there's a large group of people that think that you can look at the outcomes of a system to decide if the system is biased for or against people, right? Mm-hmm.
Meaning, yeah, you can look at like racial disparities. And so therefore, if black people or women or gay people have on average outcomes that are more negative, therefore the system we can conclude is biased against them.
And then you tell them that homosexual people on average make 10% more than heterosexual people. And not one person thinks the system is rigged against heterosexual people, nor do they amend their belief that you can look at outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you know, just some sort of massive cognitive bias.
That you can look solely at outcomes, yeah.
Yeah, so just you just know like, okay, there's some massive cognitive bias going on. I've had that exact conversation with multiple people, and literally never has someone gone, oh, wow, maybe the system is rigged against heterosexuals. And they've also never gone, oh, maybe we need to do more than just look at the outcome data to decide if a system is rigged or oppressive. They just go, they don't change their mind. They don't address the point. They try to get out of there as quickly as possible. And then the next conversation they have about the topic is exactly as if you and them had never spoken. Like they don't change their arguments at all.
Yeah, well, and I mean, we've said this, but I think it bears repeating because it's an important point that I need to remind myself is that the reason for that is because our brains are not truth-seeking mechanisms. They are survival-seeking, identity-preserving, pleasure-seeking mechanisms. So they will provide to you the eloquence or rational gymnastics required to maintain a belief that keeps you getting paid or keeps you in the community that you want to stay in, or like it'll just do whatever we want. And I think it's interesting hearing, like I was watching John McWhorter talk about, he's got a new book on the problems with wokeism, and he describes it as a religion. And I think that's true, but I think everything's a religion, honestly. I think materialism is a religion. I think there are so many things that if you look deeply into them, do not have solid foundations, but they keep you happy, warm, comfortable, and alive. Sure. And so you just keep going.
Materialism is like a religion that no one admits to following, though.
Exactly. Like Catholicism in the whatevers, you know what I mean? It was like if you were in a Catholic town and you had never heard of a single Muslim in the 1400s, like there just was a God and you just went to church. There wasn't an option. So, but yeah, I think materialism falls into that. And I think it would be impossible to find a human that didn't build their life on completely axiomatic, meaning unfounded basis. I don't think that such a thing exists. I think it's just a bunch of pleasure, survival seeking people bumping into one another, screaming that the other guy's an idiot. And for me, that makes much more sense. It's like, oh, how can two smart people, genuinely fucking smart, spend so much time interacting on these Twitch debates and not get anywhere? Because it doesn't make sense if you presume that brains are tuned to the truth. they would get there. I was like, oh.
They're trying to survive.
They're trying to survive, sure get paid. Yeah.
Make sure that their tribe still likes them.
Yeah.
Make money.
And then it makes perfect sense. Yeah. And you go like, oh, everything is right.
Of course. The system is working.
Everything is right. So speaking of cognitive biases, this Dave Portnoy thing. I don't know if you've heard some of the details.
I literally only know what you have told me off camera.
Okay,
I've done no primary research.
So separately, I was considering, if I do make a video comeback, doing an exploration, kind of like I did with OnlyFans, of why do some people survive cancels and why do other people not?
Mm. I welcome you making that video.
I don't know that anyone would be interested on our main channel because it's not, it doesn't
no, I think
have
they would
applicable, it doesn't have applicable takeaways. It
doesn't matter. Neither does the OnlyFans or sociopaths. Some stuff is just
some
fascinating.
Some stuff is interesting. Yeah, so I don't know the answer yet. I have some ideas. But anyway, so the short of the Dave Portnoy story, which I don't know all the details, is the Business Insider apparently spends 8 months, and this is more from Dave's perspective, preparing a piece. He says hit piece, but like researching deeply into him, contacting all different people, contacting women that he's worked with, like people that are tagged in photos with him, like looking for dirt, which I think is suspect to start. You know what I mean?
Just what's the message they were sending?
The message they were sending?
The DM, you said they DM'd a bunch of people.
Hey, I'm doing... Some people showed some... Hey, I'm doing... And again, these could be fabricated. I'm doing a piece on Dave. Like, would you have time to talk? They don't tip their hand in the reach out message, but it's like, why the fuck are you contacting random employees who have nothing to... Like, you're there's a case that you're trying to build that you started with. Like, you decided that you were the prosecution and that this needed to happen with regards to this. And also with a particular narrow... band of things. Like, you, they weren't looking for, like, I don't know, is Dave Portnoy mean to his male employees? they just weren't interested. So
might be.
Maybe they did. Maybe they looked for all of it. Maybe any, because there was a Tony Robbins hit piece that was just like, by the way, he also did X, Y, and Z. So there were two main allegations, as far as I understand. One woman who hooked up with him says she was, I believe, screaming no for it to stop, which he denies outright, categorically. Mm-hmm. And another one who was, I think, 20 years old, and after she slept with him, hooked up with him, got depressed and, like, bad depressed. May have had to go to a hospital. Or I don't quote me on that. And then so he goes on and defends himself on Twitter or whatever. But the part that I thought was interesting was actually the second piece, that was included. And the... I think this is dangerous for women to say, okay, so here's someone who's 20, he's older. You know, the argument goes, there's power imbalances, he didn't treat her well, she got depressed after the interaction. But they don't make a compelling case that there wasn't consent. They don't make it, like, in fact, he shows texts from her that are explicitly sexual, that are, the impression that I got from it is that he treated this as a casual encounter, and she was like, oh my God, it's Dave Portnoy. Like, super excited. And possibly as a result of that and so many other factors in her life, was very upset when he didn't continue to pursue her after having slept with her.
One time?
I don't know how many times. There was a text that he says, do you miss my dick yet? Like, they were clearly sexy texting after that. I don't know how many times.
Did she say she did?
Yes. Yes. Pretty damning evidence against compulsion or anything like that. And the argument is, I don't know what the argument is, but the idea that
he is
responsible for her sadness as a result of their interaction, which at the time was consensual, is, I think, the most patriarchal thing that you can argue. Yeah. It's like, no, what he needs to do is police her feelings because he's a man and she's just a woman. I feel like that same line of argumentation takes away her agency. You would probably have to say she shouldn't be voting because if she can't make decisions about who she has sex with and the repercussions of that, how could she possibly be trusted to elect the president of the United States of America? And this is not what I don't believe that that's the case, but I do believe that two things are possible. He could have not been nice to her. He could have treated her callously. She could have, been upset by it. And that can primarily be her responsibility, and not something that it means that people should stop subscribing to Barstool Sports and ruin his life over. And so I think it's patriarchal is the word that came to my head. It was like the definition of the patriarchy, that he needs to be in charge of her emotional well-being and that she can't make decisions that potentially upset her.
Well, I think especially because you will tend to see that in one direction. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think anybody thought that Ariana Grande abused her power when she got Pete Davidson to fall in love with her and then called off their wedding. Mm-hmm. And like, he was suicidally depressed over it.
I think these are
beautiful
fair points.
And wealthy and famous. She's more powerful than him in every way? Like,
not physically, but...
Sure. I was thinking like looks, fame, wealth. Mm-hmm.
Well, now he was suicidally... Apparently Pete Davis has got mad game. So that's a separate story.
Well, listen, I don't feel bad for him. He actually doesn't, even though he was depressed over it, he has nothing bad to say about her. But I'm just saying...
It would have been improper to say, she promised me X, Y, and Z. She hurt, like, I'm hurt. I got depressed after. Therefore, that is a comment on her behavior.
On the matriarchy.
Yes. Or no, on her behavior. Like, that is an indictment of something that she did. She should have wielded her power over me more justly. And I think in these power conversations, we forget that at every instance of power, as far as I can tell, is where somebody has something that somebody else wants. And that can be literal access to their naked body. That can be money. That can be all sorts of things. And these power dynamics exist. And as far as I can tell, I think every single human interaction that has ever occurred.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
And there are some that we want to, I think, legally or socially control against, like your boss.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are some that you do want the law to intervene with, and I think it's totally appropriate to.
But I think, given that, in my view, every single human interaction involves a power dynamic, we don't want to intervene in most of these. And people instead need to learn how to deal with their desire to have the attention, money, sex that other people could offer them in a way that does not cause them to make decisions that harm themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you go the other direction. I think there's some states where you can legally have quote-unquote consensual sex with a police officer, like, after he's arrested you, before you get to the police station. It's like, no, let's make that illegal. Like, let's say, like, no consensual sex. Because then what was happening was
is that true?
Yeah, and then cops were raping people and
no,
then saying it was
that's
consensual.
Not true.
Yeah, yeah. It's a thing.
You can get arrested and fall in love on the
in
way
some
to
states,
the station.
At, back in, like, at some point in history, like recent history, yeah, maybe okay. Not to, as of today. But so okay. There are places where we want to say no. Government says no. No consenting in this situation. It's always a power abuse if it's, you know, a police or your boss or whatever mm-hmm. it might be. It's also weird, though, because the boss thing, which everybody's, I think, pretty on board with in terms of saying this is a power imbalance and sexual
one
relations,
that we want to control
shouldn't yeah. have happened between boss and employee when the boss controls the employee's pay or ability to continue at that place of work. Mm-hmm. Well, like, yeah, that's bad. Except for sometimes.
And here's the problem with it. It's like, except for sometimes when everybody winds up being happy as a result of it for a couple of years, meaning like Bill Gates marries Melinda Gates, no problem with the power imbalance until they divorce, at which point you started hearing stories that Bill was sexually inappropriate in the office. And those, I think, didn't make it very far because it's like a little crazy. But this... I agree with you. This isn't confronted so often. It's like it's a power imbalance, except when they get married, everybody claps and is super happy that the vice president married the analyst or something
also,
like that.
Also, only like some of the time. I don't know. It's a weird dynamic because then if a rock star or an athlete has sex with a fan, you're not like, what? What about the power abuse? Like, no, of course they did. That's what we expect rock stars and athletes to do.
But with YouTubers, it's a massive issue.
Or Twitch streamers or whoever.
That's what I'm saying.
Is.
Yeah, I think, and this is, I guess my point is that with
we
power.
We haven't quite figured out as a society how we feel about when it's okay to use fame and money to make yourself more attractive and when it's not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we haven't sussed it out. We do not have a principle that says it's never okay or it's always okay. It's like, well, we'll kind of like judge it based on how weird you look or how yeah. weird you make us feel. And also if you end up getting married or not.
Yeah, how quickly after the interaction the person is upset. So there's this type of argument that I just noticed that I'm hearing a lot where it's just like a true statement is made, but it's very narrow. So like, you know, there's a power imbalance when Dave Portnoy sleeps with this person and that's not okay. And it's like, I agree with the first half, but if power balances and relationships aren't okay, we can't have relationships, because like every relationship starts when somebody wants something from someone else, whether that's them to like them back or to be naked with them or to go on dates that are really fun, that they have this unique way of like making going to the park the most exciting thing in the world. And you just want to be around that. And I felt, you know, we had a conversation with like over a year ago at this point with the Rational Male Rolo guy. And I felt similarly, where he was like, women are irrational and women are like this. And I was like, yes. And so are men. And I feel like, I feel like the narrow focus, it's just a common tact that I'm starting to notice is that a true statement is made and then a broad implication about how that is wrong or bad or needs to be uniquely dealt with. It's like, no, open. Like, this is a much larger problem than you're confronting. So that's all.
All right.
What else you got?
Mine's weird. I don't even remember what triggered this, but I was just thinking about, I don't know why I thought about this, but the pejorative of taking the easy way out. So people are like, oh, you're taking the easy way out. And that's just assumed to be a bad thing, because sometimes the easy way is also a bad thing. But then I think people inherently think doing things that are easy, that makes them bad. And I don't know why I was thinking about it, but it reminded me of when we moved to Brazil and we were moving there with a guy who had a blog, and he told his fans, hey, I'm moving to Brazil and I'm going to live with these guys, work on my charisma and dating. And someone wrote in and said, you're taking the easy way out by moving to a country where you're just going to be considered sexy because of your race.
No.
And he, it would like devastated his self-esteem, because he's like, oh, I don't want to take the easy way out.
I'm supposed to play in hard
mode. Yeah. Like I live in New York
where everyone's mean.
Exactly. And I was like, why do you think that it's bad to go somewhere where everyone's friendly and beautiful and thinks you're super attractive?
And by the way, that is not what happened. Like, it was a normal place with.
It's just a lesson of don't outsource your self-esteem to random people you don't know on the internet. But yeah, it really shook him that he was taking the easy way out. And to me, I feel like that can be a great decision to make sometimes, is to take the easy way to a good goal or whatever it may be. So
most of the time, probably.
Right? But it's pejorative. I mean, you've heard it. Like, oh, that person's taking the easy way out. I don't even have to tell you about the situation. The mm-hmm. undertone of that is that it's negative.
Yeah, I think kind of the problem is that the slogan obviously has positive use cases, right? Where it's, instead of telling this person the truth, you're taking the short-term gain mm-hmm. at the long-term cost is the problem. I think that's what is more intended by the statement is, oh, this is a short-term gain that is going to hurt you in the long run.
Yeah, that's where it started.
But then it just becomes a slogan.
Well, I think especially in like hustle, this is, I guess, for our audience, who a lot of people are like hustlers and growth-oriented, I think in that culture of I'm going to make myself better every single day, the intent of that slogan, which started off well, which is, listen, don't take the easy way out by not telling your wife that you cheated, because down the line this is going to create a whole mm-hmm. bunch of fucking problems for your relationship, just became never do the easy thing mm-hmm. ever. She's like, that's terrible advice. Sometimes it's totally great to just achieve a goal by doing it in a way that's easy.
Yeah, this is one of, but I think you get okay, but like, as I reflect on my own childhood, and it's like, how would you raise a kid well? This is part of the issue, is that every situation is infinitely complex, and the language that we give in terms of advice is not. And so even with the best of intentions, as you're instructing kids, or even sometimes on Patreon, where I'll be like, oh no, in these type of situations, what you want to do, that can always be limiting to people's mm-hmm. lives in negative ways. So I'm sure if you went through our Patreons or whatever, I've said slogans that are similar to this. And I know that somewhere in somebody's mind that got stuck in their head is like, Charlie says, do the hard thing or whatever, which is just definitely not what I would ever intend to say, but may have literally said some point. So it's just like, that's one of the things about kids. I look at some of the life lessons that I drew for my parents without ever realizing I drew them. I was like, oh my God, that was pretty fucking black and white.
Yeah.
And probably not intended that way, or even if it was intended that way, is a really foolish way of looking at the world. And I think that's just what happens, and that's how people get limiting beliefs. And makes it impossible to grow up without them because you're just a dumb little black and white machine.
Yeah.
Just.
No, it's I mean, basically it's impossible.
Never talk to strangers, you know, and like all of a sudden your mom collapses and there's one person there.
Well, that's also this is a hard tangent, but it is funny. The advice we grew up with, it's like, don't talk to strangers. Don't get into cars with people you don't know.
Yeah.
All the advice we were given is now exactly how you live your life.
Yeah.
It's like connect with people on the internet that you don't know and then get in the car with strangers.
Yes, exactly. It's literally how I commute.
Yeah.
My last thing here is I just did because we have our D&D first episode tonight. We're going to be filming. Doesn't mean it's going to come out, but we're working on it. And you would never know it by what I've got, but I was leaning on Russell Brand's accent to develop my character. And it's not going to be that good. But man, his titles continue
to
escalate. And I was like, has Russell gone off the deep end? The one that I watched was You Couldn't Make It Up! !! Check out this billionaire scam! All caps! And then in the video, he is not unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
He is like, I actually thought like his normal, jokey, comical self. But a couple interesting things. One, I'm on his email list, and I got a Google Doc survey. What do you like? And it was like, do you like, literal question. And I should say literal. This is close to the intent of it, because I don't remember the exact words. On a scale of like, one being like, things that challenge my point of view, and five being like, things that confirm what I already believe, what kind of content do you prefer? And it's just like, oh my God, this is how you're going to decide what to talk about, if I want to have my confirmation bias stroked or not. Like, and I appreciate the bald-facedness of the question. It's just like naked. Like, oh yeah, do you want me to tell you what you want to hear or introduce you to new ideas? Because I'll do either. Like, yeah. I'm totally willing. And I know that Russell didn't set that up. He's got somebody on his team clearly that is telling him what topics to talk about, telling him which things, telling him what, like, and his channel is exploding. But here's some of the comments.
Has it been good for business?
It's been great for business.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic for business. It's been fantastic for his profile. Is it good for the world? I don't know. This classic question of like, the content of it, I didn't actually object to. Now, the one objection might be like, in choosing these topics to talk about, you are leaving out the more useful non-news topics of like, spirituality.
How do I become more mindful and present?
Exactly. Like, yeah. In fact, this might be the literal opposite of being more mindful and present. But the content itself within, if you had decided you were going to talk about billionaires not paying taxes, it wasn't unhinged. It was reasonable and all those sorts of things. I'll see if I grab some of the, some of the comments. And it's just like, I don't know if this is representative of the average viewer, but it's like, you definitely do then bring these types into your fold. So that's why they wanted Brandon as a puppet, referring to Joe Biden, to give themselves stimmy checks. Like, the billionaires voted for Joe Biden so they could get $1,200 worth of stimulus checks. This is the fourth most upvoted comment. And again, most people don't comment, most people don't vote, but like, as a selection of the commenters, that's a pretty ridiculous take as to why the billionaires wanted Biden.
I promise if they were thinking about their money, they wanted Trump.
Yes.
They wanted Trump because they didn't want to pay taxes on capital gains.
Yeah, and then another one. I was all wrong about Brand. He's a truth warrior, which is just like, this is someone who made their opinion based on what they saw in a tabloid of Russell Brand, you know, and reframed their opinion when he said
billionaires are bad.
Billionaires are bad, which isn't what he said, but is how it was perceived. And I think the title has a strong impact.
I was
going to
say that. I actually think that you...
titles are freaking powerful, man.
Yeah, yeah. The tough part about saying that the way you're going to do it is you're going to get them in with a title that's crazy and salacious, but then speak totally moderately,
yeah.
Is that everything you say will be seen through the lens of the title. That's why for Justin, sometimes he's trying so hard to get views and I'll make him change a title because I'm like, what we say, I stand by, but through the lens of this title, it's going to be interpreted completely different.
And it's extremely reliable that the title can color that sort of thing. Yeah.
And I also get what Russell's doing, because you're saying like he's got caps, he's got exclamation points. We have someone for Charisma on Command, someone else who is kind of in charge of titles and thumbnails, and me and him are just playing tug of war right now, because I want the titles to be close to the content. He wants the content to do as well as possible, and we both have good goals, I think. And so we're trying to strike that balance. You know, he wants to capitalize things. He wants to have exclamation points, and he wants to have very incendiary words, and
But even our works. Titles, if I were to play, you know, devil's advocate, it's like, look, this video, if I were to accurately title it, is like 8 minutes describing Russell Brand's communication in a few scenarios. Like, that's a more accurate title than like how to captivate anyone, because you can't captivate anyone, you know what I mean? Which is still a title that we'd be okay with.
Well, actually, this video, you can, in the sense that...
What if they're deaf and blind and none of these things work? You can't, you know what I mean? Like,
well... The advice at a high level was be funny, fascinating, and make them feel good. So if you can make a deaf, blind person laugh, feel good, and be fascinated, will like you.
What if they were traumatized early in life by like their comedian father who was all of those things? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, look, in the world of every and any, it's all I have to do is find one to bust it.
Yeah.
And so
I actually felt good about this one, though. I did reflect on it before. Because
I think you're totally reasonable.
We do the tug of war. So I have to reflect and be like, okay. How do I feel about that one? And I was like, yeah, if you do make someone laugh and they think you're fascinating and you make them feel good, they're going to like you.
Yes. And I think that this is, you know, it's practically the question that I ask myself is, but this still for Russell Brand is like, you know, what is the impact this has on the world? I've heard Daniel Schmachtenberger talk about like the truth commons, and it's this idea that we all contribute to, a feeling of trust or the racing of the nuclear arms race to more salacious titles and things. Like, how does this impact that? And like, just about everything anyone says on the internet is polluting the truth commons. Because if it wasn't, it wouldn't get any traction at all, or very little traction. Like very rare truthful things would go.
Yeah.
Even like,
there's that one girl that your girlfriend likes. She'll just post, today at home.
Oh, what's her name?
Her whole title.
Emma Chamberlain.
Eating McDonald's. Yeah, yeah. That's her whole title.
Yeah, yeah. So God bless her. Yeah. You know what I mean?
She's rocking the truth commons.
Even so, it's like, were you eating McDonald's the whole time? Or was like the first part you laying in your bed? So if I were to split hairs over this.
No, I love her titles. I'll know. Oh.
Good for her.
I think they're great.
It's great. No. I think it's awesome.
And today.
Yeah, yeah.
Best title ever. I love it.
And I think ours are largely very defensible, and we there's still tests that are being run where we're like, that's a little bit too strong of an adjective there. But we've seen it and we've done it. So for instance, one of the split tests that we ran was like phrases that kill your confidence versus phrases that destroy in all caps your confidence. And that one won. And so what I've seen is he's done this a couple times. The more intense the noun, verb, or adjective, like the more, if you were to grade any sort of title on a emotional spike, the better it does. You've got these algorithms that are just like finely tuned to knee-jerk reactions. And so you're like, what makes humans flinch? It's like, rage, all these kinds of things. It's like, great, let's reward whatever that is. It's like, sometimes cuteness, you know, sometimes cute animals, but not all the time. So it's not the best. Anything else you got?
No.
Dope.
Do you want to go to questions?
Let's do some questions.
Yep. First one is about your video on sociopaths. I was wondering if there was anything you personally found interesting about your investigation, or maybe something you weren't so aware of before the video.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty confident one of my friends is a sociopath now, and I did not think that before. So things that I thought were interesting or I didn't know. I mean, it's a lot. I didn't know anything about the topic. I think the fact that the leading theory is that sociopaths are created by trauma, whereas psychopaths are born, I thought was interesting. I think that gives you a more sympathetic lens to anyone who's a sociopath.
Or a psychopath, right?
Yeah, I guess or a psychopath.
You didn't pick this, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I also thought it was interesting. So people, I think, know sociopaths can be dangerous because there is a high chance that they will manipulate you to get what they want, even if it's to your detriment, because they don't feel empathy for you, right? That's what people know and think about sociopaths. To me, what I found interesting was that that's such a unavoidable natural consequence of the lack of empathy. Like being a sociopath creates that internal instinct to manipulate. It's not that they are feelingless and then they choose, they're like, oh, I will choose to manipulate because it will get me what I want. It's like, no, they have a strong instinct to do that because all they're thinking about is what they want, because they can't feel badly for you losing out on something. And so they just think of everything like it's a game almost. And so if they outsmart you or trick you or manipulate you and you're left sad while they've gotten what they want, what they're just confused by is your sadness. Because they just go, well, what do you mean? We were playing a game and I won. And so I happen to have fucked your wife or gotten, you know, stolen from you or whatever it might be. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Is this like, yeah, I mean, it takes to not do that takes a lot of willpower from people who have ASPD to not manipulate you. And the way I've used a lot of sociopaths who are trying to live with integrity, and the way that they get there has to be rational. Mm-hmm. And so you hear them often talk not about feeling badly, but just about like, what do I want the world to be? I want the world to be a place that's calm and safe. Okay, when I do things like this, am I contributing to that goal? No. And so then they can find morality by almost a utilitarian logic.
Yeah, and maybe this makes me a sociopath. I see that spectrum existing. One of the words you said was empathetic. Mm-hmm. I actually wonder, and I can only speak from my own experience, how empathetic most moral people are versus how guilt-driven and how fear-driven.
Well, guilt is something that sociopaths don't feel.
Okay, so that would be, so maybe most people don't feel, but like empathy is the idea that if someone is suffering, I literally feel... I can tap into their feeling state and feel their feeling state in the same way that like I can feel my left arm and my right arm or something like that versus what I think I often experience is like, you idiot, that was wrong. You shouldn't have done that. Like you hurt, like that's bad, which I don't think qualifies as empathy.
But you feel that you're not saying that to yourself. You feel that in your gut or you feel that in your heart.
Like it's not, I think that it's was not like socialized into me.
Sure, but what I'm saying is you're not sitting there feeling nothing, but going, you know, I think this is probably something I shouldn't have done. This is you in your stomach feel guilt. You feel a knot in your stomach, right?
Sometimes I have to suss it out and go, is this right? Is this wrong? And other times I'm like, oh fuck. Like it, but again, and that knot I think was put there by socialization. Like I learned that these types of behaviors are bad boy behaviors and you shouldn't do that. And therefore you should punish yourself and avoid doing that so that you don't have to punish yourself.
Yeah. My impression is that that knot in the stomach is not something that happens for people who are diagnosably ASPD. Mm-hmm. But another thing that I think is totally reasonable is that it is a spectrum. Like Logan Paul came out and said this when he was getting a bunch of heat. He's like, I think I might have some sociopathic tendencies. I don't think I'm a full blown sociopath. I think it's a spectrum. And I do think that's true. I think when you're diagnosed, you're really far down the spectrum, though. Like, I don't think that the people who are diagnosed as psychopaths or sociopaths, if it were a bell curve of some kind in terms of how much they feel empathy, it's a very long tail.
Well, we know the percentage, right? What's the percentage of people that are sociopaths?
1 in 30.
So 3% of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 1 in 30 are, well, I don't know if it's that's sociopaths or ASPD, mm-hmm. but it's 1 in 30, yeah. Which is also, that's another thing. It's like, I think our high school class had 200 people that graduated in it? 500 people that graduated in it? 500. So that's a lot of sociopaths.
Yeah, yeah.
Like just straight up that were in school that it would be almost impossible for there not to have been 10 to 20 people who were actually ASPD. I couldn't tell you who they were.
Mm-hmm. I could think about it.
And so yeah, that was another thing was how common it is. I found very surprising.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting video to make.
All right, I've got one more. As I hear you guys speak a lot about psychedelic therapy, but not so much about regular psychotherapy, as a psychology student, I worry that people may start seeing psychedelics as a shortcut for mental health. So I'm curious about your opinion on psychotherapy and the clear correlation it appears to have with mental health and well-being.
Does psychotherapy? So here's a challenge. And does psychotherapy... And this is just to you personally. These are questions, genuinely. Have clear positive data? And is that data above placebo? Meaning somebody attempting to improve their life and willing to spend $100 a session once a week in order to do that, is psychotherapy better than that same amount of effort and money going towards something else? So I say this as someone who has talked to a bunch of therapists.
Yeah, I don't have the expertise that maybe a person in the industry would, but my impression is that cognitive behavior therapy has done very well against placebo, but regular talk therapy, I don't think has shown necessarily like wildly impressive results.
So my personal experience is that, similarly, we talk about homelessness, like calling something talk therapy. Like, I've had such a variety. This is why we eventually stopped promoting BetterHelp, was because I was like, oh my God, I have an awesome therapist. This is so fucking useful. And then I went back to BetterHelp and tried again and got another guy that was not good. And I was like,
and
oh,
we did, this and we is talked not- to them. And I understand why they can't because of the nature of the work, but we're like, we can't promote you guys unless you do some sort of Uber star system, Yelp type thing. Because I can promote the shit out of this if it's a collection of great therapists. Mm-hmm. But if it's a collection of therapists, some who are great and some who are not, then it's much harder to
promote. And the individual's experience is going to vary on that bell curve.
And for a lot of reasons, you know, privacy, incentives, whatever, they didn't want to do it. So we stopped working with them. But you're accurately picking up my opinion, which is that psychedelic therapy is a shortcut and,
by the way,
much faster paced than regular therapy. And I think that's what the Johns Hopkins studies are showing. I think that's why it's being fast-tracked and being considered, it's a breakthrough. It's a breakthrough therapy.
Yeah.
Because it is having materially faster and better results. And that's why the US government is basically fast-tracking it through approval for people with PTSD and things like that.
The people that I've gone to, in fact, all of them, and I know many at this point, that... not even beyond the ones that I've gone to, that I know people have gone to. I think all of them started as therapists.
Yeah, no one I know. And listen, this happens. First of all, straight up, I want to say this does happen. Someone does psychedelics a bunch, tries to become a shaman or does become a shaman, has no background in actual therapy. And maybe they're good, maybe they're bad, but I'm not here to endorse that. But yeah, a lot of these people
started as therapy, were frustrated by the intransigence of certain problems, were trying to find breakthroughs, found this, and... it is incredible.
Also, I didn't mean to cut you up, but go to MAPS and look at the requirements for doing the government-approved psychedelic therapy, and it requires a facilitator, a licensed therapist, a licensed psychotherapist. Like, they're involved.
And, like, in order I think to do the government-approved program, they work super well in tandem. That's I guess, the other piece that I'm making is, like, it's not to remove talk therapy or psychotherapy. It's to... sort of have that be place some guardrails around the experience. But what I've seen is, and I've done this now several times, there is not a therapist on the face of the planet that is as powerful as your own inner healer when put in a safe environment with that sort of stuff. And they can help you, guide you, coach you, discover what you talked about. But there's no amount of cognitive training or even on-the-job experience that is going to enable someone to do the type of deep healing in the amount of time that it can be done with some of these particular psychedelics. And I'm talking specifically right now about MDMA.
I do want to shout out cognitive behavior therapy, though, because it has, they haven't run it against MDMA therapy because MDMA therapy is still not legal, but they've done tests where you do placebo, SSRIs, cognitive behavior therapy, and cognitive behavior therapy performs very well. Mm-hmm. It's apparently as well as SSRIs for the right person. Handedly beats placebo. If you have depression and anxiety, that form of therapy seems to be great. So I'm not trying to poo-poo it at all. But yeah, you have completely picked up on, I guess, our opinion of psychedelic therapy.
And I just want to just reiterate, it's not to entirely remove it. It's to be a very important staple with trained therapists in the area who have it experienced with trauma and all whatever sorts of things, addiction, you know, anything.
But don't just take our word for it. Seriously, look at the Johns Hopkins research, look at MAPS. I mean, that people are doing published studies where they are doing research, like straight up clinical research on psychedelic therapy. So you can
see the results.
Dig into the data, look at the results. It's all public and out there as far as I know.
Cool.
That was it.
That's it. All right, we're going to hop over to Patreon.
What are we talking about today on Patreon, Justin?
Today, if we can get to them all, we're going to be talking about how to be more playful and light. How to stop being overly self-censoring, and if charisma experts get turned down ever.
Lots of charisma today. Ooh, lots of charisma today.
Fun stuff.
All right, so if you guys want to see that, I think it's like $3 a month. You get access to all of them. There's so much stuff there. It keeps us going, keeps money in Justin's pocket. So what, we hope
where
to
do they,
see you over
how do they join?
Patreon.com/charisma.
Patreon.
Is it slash charisma?
Slash
is that
charisma?
It?
Charisma on command.
Don't.
Charisma on command. Charisma on command. Never mind. I'm gonna.
It'll be in the YouTube description and maybe show notes. So thanks, guys. We appreciate you. See you in Patreon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.